Okay, I think that was a success. It's safe to say that was a success.
God, I am soaking wet. My lap is sodden.
I made the mistake of having a peek at the video while we did that. It was a very scary sight.
So, hello everyone, my name's Simon, welcome to the WikiCast.
I'm Dan.
And this is the WikiCast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Dan, what did you say we were talking about again?
We're talking about Kala Pasha.
Kala Pasha, is that a person?
It is a person. He was an American professional wrestler, vaudeville comedian and film actor during the silent era.
He's Dave Bautista! He's the silent version of Dave Bautista.
He basically is. This guy was an absolute legend. So I was just doing I was skimming through his biography. It was Kala Pasha was the stage name of Joseph T. Rickard, a native of Detroit. He was a professional wrestler whom the press called the Crazy Turk, which is obviously something you could only get away with in that era, before performing on vaudeville and appearing in 74 films between 1919 and 1931. His success with Mack Sennett enabled him to be a free spender, claiming later he would often go to town with $150,000 strapped around his waist.
What a lad!
It then goes on to say the money didn't last, though, and he'd often go into town with... And not long after, he was arrested for striking a man over the head with a milk bottle during a dust-up involving 5 cents.
5 cents?
Which is incredible.
How the mighty fall.
Oh, my God, yeah. Just incredible.
What did you say his name was again? Khaled Pasha.
Kala, K-A-L-L-A, Pasha. But his real name was Joseph T. Rickard.
Because Pasha is an honorific, I think. Because there's like, in the First World War, there was several Pashas that were involved in like antagonizing it. Like Kemal Pasha, I think, was the main guy.
Okay.
So I think it's like the Turkish equivalent of like sir or like a peerage or something. So it's a stage name. Oh, that's so cool.
He sounds like a really cool guy. I just thought it was quite good that he was vaguely film related, because you know that's arguably one of our favorite things. And I took a fantastic history of American cinema module in my first year of what would have been last academic year, and that was incredible. It was really, really interesting. Also, they did a kind of optional series on like the avant-garde. And it was just like, there's so much there. I'd love to do more of it, and hopefully I will be next year.
I mean,
so.
Are any of the films that he starred in, would we know of any of them?
I was just looking through the list. We've got One More Chance, I Surrender Dear, The Show of Shows, Seven Footprints to Satan, The Dove, When a Man... See, I can't see any names that I kind of... The Dictator, but not that Dictator.
Oh.
The Wicked Darling.
And this is like the 20s, did you say?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. Because this was a time when it was like a gold rush, wasn't there, of silent pictures. It was the studio system, wasn't it? At this point, it was the studio system. And, you know, it was just like they were just pumping a certain number of films out. You know, there were so many that we only hear about the very best. And apparently none of them, including this guy.
So the guy that Joseph T. Rickard, Kala Pasha, who did a lot of work with this Mack Sennett, who I spoke about earlier. He was a Canadian-born American, this Mack guy, director and actor, and was known as the innovator of slapstick comedy.
Ah, that's interesting. So was he involved with someone like Buster Keaton or anything like that?
I imagine he must have, yeah.
That's cool.
Filmography, here we go. Anything with... Na 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 na.
Na 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 na. Sorry.
What? We've also got, I mean, one of the things that Sennett became an actor, singer, dancer, clown, set designer, and director for Biograph.
Oh. See, the mistake Biograph there company. Is forgetting that I am the Sennett.
Very good. Very good. See, we're already back. We had a very, very nerdy episode last week.
We did.
But we're back in full force.
Which has done very well. As soon as we started talking about really geeky stuff, loads of
it has.
Like, I don't know. I wasn't aware of this before we started doing the podcast, but there are podcast charts, and we're in it. We're in the top 200 podcasts.
People actually listen to this.
You listen to this bollocks?
It's amazing. Thank you so much. It's such a... It's such a kind of surreal experience. In fact, I was recently at a party near where you live. Not you, the readers. I mean, Simon.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow.
I've been watching you.
Very specific.
Yeah, and it was in this lovely, lovely village. And I had a really, really lovely time. And I got talking to a girl what was her name? I can't remember. Poor form. But she was from Ireland. She had a lovely voice. But she's a huge, huge podcaster. Like, she listens to loads of them. And she recommended some to me. And I said, oh, it's funny you should say that. I actually do a little bit of podcasting myself. She was like, oh, really? What is it? And I was going to do an accent there, but I held back.
Oh, really? What is it? Is it like that?
Great.
Is it just
there
like
that? There we go. Why not? Totally inoffensive. And I said, oh, it's called the Wikicast. And she was like, oh, Hank, yeah, I've heard of that.
Oh, no, no.
And I was like, wait, what? I'm sorry. That's not... No.
I'm still struggling with this idea that people listen to this, because this is just us chatting fluff. And, you know, 1,000 people, more than 1,000 people listen to every episode. And frankly, I think it would be hilarious if we gate crashed the charts. And in amongst all those properly produced, you know, professionally done podcasts, there's just...
Yeah.
The us two, with me not really knowing what I'm doing editing it, the both of us wrestling with equipment and chatting bollocks. Yeah. So please help us gate crash the charts. Tell all your friends about us, because
it'd be amazing.
It would be hilarious. It would be so funny. Especially tell them to start with this episode and then you just get us gargling at the start.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I was thinking about this and I was.
A dangerous
mainly
pastime. The correct response is I know, but carry on.
Comparing it to other the main big podcasts that top the UK charts are usually recorded radio shows, often BBC or, you know, Absolute Radio or something like that. And really, for most cases, it's just people talking, which suddenly kind of I had this kind of epiphonic moment of. Like, oh, this everything is suddenly validated, because that's really what we do.
Nice use of epiphonic. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, mate. Well, I mean, it's almost like I study English for my degree.
I'm looking at the top five podcasts in the UK are Desert Island Discs, which is a Radio 4 show.
Which is superb.
It is good. We can't really expect to beat them. TED Talks. So audio versions, again, very professional. The Game of Thrones podcast, where they review an episode a week. Oh, we could talk. Oh, no, we can't. We can't spoil that for people. We cannot. I will not be the person that spoils the recent season.
You'd be killed.
The second most popular is Friday Night Comedy from BBC Radio 4. So the News Quiz, Now Show, Dead Ringers, that kind of stuff. Again, professionals. And then number one is My Dad Wrote a Porno.
See, I still haven't listened to any of that.
It is good. It's very, very good. Although you have to admit, my most recent recommendation went very well when both you, I, and Pixel Girl sat down to watch My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Not my ex. Like in a zoo, we threw like emotional stimuli at her and she went nuts. It's just like, oh, this is good.
I was really, really pleasantly surprised by that. I started watching it and I kind of looked over at you and you slowly looked over at me and I was like, oh, this is alarmingly close to exactly the kind of American TV that I really loathe.
Yeah.
And then I gave it about 10 minutes and I was suddenly like, oh, hang on. This is actually really clever and well done.
Because the thing is, for those of you who don't watch it, and if you don't, I recommend you give it a go. We're not sponsored. We just enjoyed it. It's a romantic comedy, I guess you could call it, like a fish out of water, awkward comedy, but it's also a musical. And the songs happen just infrequently enough that you forget it's a musical. And then someone starts singing and it'll be a different style in every single one.
And making itself known as a musical, the structure of the narrative, it can get away with so much more because it doesn't necessarily have to be you're in the first 5 minutes of the first episode. There's this big choral number that's incredibly reminiscent of La La Land.
Yeah.
And from then on, you're kind of like, oh, your suspension of disbelief is at such a point where you can just get, there are plot points that are resolved in the space of like literally a sentence. It's like a Gilbert and Sullivan show where you don't know what the fuck's going on for the entire run. And then in the last scene, on the last page of the script, somebody will suggest that the two main characters get married, or everyone just marries off with each other, and everything's fine. You get a big number, curtain call. That's it. You're done.
Although
basically what
I'm going to say, like it's light and frothy, but it also does actually look at some relatively deep issues, like mental health stuff, like the stuff to do with her fear of birthday parties.
Yeah.
It was like very well done. Like, no, again, we sound like we're sponsored. We really, would anyone honestly sponsor this podcast? I mean, Jesus Christ.
No, that's a funny question, but it's also a very serious question.
Please, if anyone would like to sponsor this podcast, get in touch.
Simon and I are fully ready to advertise like shameless whores and just be like, let's just go. I do not mind who it is, where it is, how tenuous or where the moral compass is spinning. I'm straight in.
Just like, it doesn't even matter if it's not a product that's available in the UK. We'll sell like US insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
Like literally, we need the money, guys. We really, really need the money.
Please.
The house is falling apart. Well, actually, the house is very full at the moment because
it is very full. Well,
I'm not meant to be here. This is the elephant in the room.
Well, that's harsh. You're always meant to be here.
It was what Mum always said. I wasn't meant to be here.
Oh, I see. I can't.
No, my PhD has basically stretched on for longer than it should have done because basically you have two supervisors and in any PhD normally, and they've kind of disagreed over the angle of the thesis, which basically means I'm going to take a bit longer to finish is the short version. It's much longer and more complicated than that. But it does mean that I'm actually staying here for probably a month, maybe two, longer than was originally planned. And we'd already promised the house to our friend Ed, who very kindly has allowed me to keep my room because I basically just claimed right of way, like the housemaid version of right of way. It's like, if you're a large goods vehicle and you're proceeding in a westerly direction, you have right of way over the undergraduate who doesn't do any work. So I have my room and he's sleeping on an airbed, basically.
He is, yeah. And it's been an interesting experience so far. That's certainly fair to say. His mother came down and helped him move over some stuff, and I was quite shocked at the volume of clothes.
Ed as well. Normally the volume.
He is deafening. But he bought these colossal plastic see-through bags with the little hole in that you can suck all the air out of, like on a huge, huge scale. And he had about, I think, maybe five or six of these bags full, and they weighed a ton, you know, because it was all just super condensed clothes. Most of which those bags are in the shed because I'm just not willing to tackle them. And as part of...
Are they all filled with foppish clothes?
Oh, you have no idea. We opened one the other day and this overwhelming smell of just kind of damp mixed with wet dog just filled the room. And this is when I knew... people have been asking me, and I think obviously you as well, what do you think it's going to be like? Because Ed, after having lived with Simon, Ed's going to bring in a very different dynamic, a lovely dynamic, but it'll be different. I've been explaining this to people as basically what my life is going to be for the next year. It's like I'm putting on a really budget production of My Fair Lady.
Oh my God, yes, that's exactly where it.
Ed is my, is it Eliza?
I've not actually seen it, so I don't know. I should watch it, I know.
Something like that. I remember watching it a long, long time ago. But basically, he'll be coming in and I'm just teaching him how to be a domestic goddess. But we're not quite at goddess level. Just to understand the concept of domesticity is where we're starting.
It was when I gave him his key the other day. And I was just like, I kind of handed it over and was like, now don't lose this. And then as he tried to take it, I looked him in the eyes. I was like, no, don't lose this. Just want to impress on you. Very important.
This is also, this harks back to readers of the podcast will have heard about Malta.
The Quietor. It's in the Mediterranean. Oh,
yes.
The Quietor.
Yeah, the Quietor, the Chaffa Choir went to Malta last year. And it was tremendous fun. But wait, actually, it was last year, wasn't it?
No, it was 2 years ago. Well, oh yeah, it was 2016 rather than 2017.
Yeah. So we went there and with Ed's relationship with keys. Now, this is a story that frustrates me almost as much as the way you treat cheese.
Oh, wow.
It's up there. We're reaching that level already of just Dan's not happy. So I remember we were having some drinks on the beach and we weren't singing early the next morning. So the general consensus was, let's get all the bevs in tonight and go a little bit mental, which is always fun. And
Chapel Choir is like that, if you're not in a Chapel Choir, by the way.
We were sitting on the beach and Ed wanted to run up and grab either, I think it was either more booze or possibly sun cream for our director because he was starting to smoke. Michael is a ginger. That's a joke there.
That's it was the other day when he was wearing shorts and I think I said at the time when the light hit his legs, it was like Gondor's calling for aid.
Yeah, it was quite surprising. I saw him striding out across Cathedral Green.
Strider!
And And I just thought, the poor guy's so busy, he's just forgotten to put trousers on. Because he was wearing these salmon pink shorts, and they just blended beautifully into the kind of the calves and, you know. Anyway.
Back to Ed.
Ed disappeared off, went up and was like, oh, can I have a key? I was like, yeah, sure. Actually, I'll come with you. Let's go. And I gave my key to one of the other housemates. I was like, oh, Ed's got his, we'll be fine, let's go. We all went up together. Literally 30 seconds into the building that we were staying in, we got into the lift, that was fine, up into the lift, got into the room, we're coming back down, and in the infinitesimally small, minute gap in between where the floor begins and the little gap, and then you're into the elevator, Ed managed to perfectly drop this quite sizable key straight, it didn't even touch the sides, just, and it was, and I just looked at him. And he started to giggle, and I was like, either one of us needs to step out of this elevator, because I'm going to go mental.
See, there are so many stories. We could make this whole podcast episode just about that tour. In fact, we may well. We own this. F*** you.
Yeah, do what we want.
So there are three stories that come to mind. I feel like maybe we should just choose one of these. We could talk about Ed Shoes and his various antics. We could talk about Corin and his balcony escapade. Mm-hmm. Or we could talk about the other Ed and the Baymax. The Baymax pose.
Okay, right. I have issues with all three of these because at least two of them, we could probably be done for libel. Defamation of character,
but
we'd be in.
But it's true.
But that doesn't make it okay. You couldn't stand up in court and go, well, to be fair, Your Honor, he is a bit of a twat. Like, the judge wouldn't go, oh, yes.
The best legal defense is not to be a terrible person.
Yeah. I think we should talk about
Ed Shoes. Great choice.
So Ed Shoes, yeah.
There was that. Where do we even start? Ed Shoes is one of the most talented organists we've ever met, and in the spirit of incredibly talented musicians, is also a very messy person. And I don't mean in the sense of he just bundles his clothes into his room and his room looks like a bomb hits it. I just mean he's a messy person.
Yeah.
To the extent where he only bought one pair of shoes on tour. And they broke, as in, like, his feet went through the soles of the shoes. So he had, like, a flap of leather on the top. And so most of the tour, he just walked around barefoot, because that's what you do. And he was, like, in a suit without, like, a full suit, without without any shoes on.
This is because we were in Malta for about a week.
In 34-degree weather. It was boiling
hot. He travelled with a satchel where he kept his music. And in that satchel, presumably somewhere, he had a toothbrush and some deodorant and some toothpaste. But everything else, he wore basically what was a tuxedo.
Yeah,
the entire week.
And
he insisted on, and this shoes thing, by the end of the week, his feet were ripped to shreds, just bloody tattered shreds.
It was like a hobbit. Toughened souls. So there were two other things. One, that time he went to the beach because he thought we'd arranged pre-drinks at the beach. We were all doing it in one of the apartments. And then we get a text from him about 30 minutes in. He was just going, hey guys, where's everyone else? And it was just him on the beach.
I'm sitting drinking a bottle of Prosecco by myself. We're like, oh, yeah. Ed.
And then there was the other time when we were doing our concert, when quite a few things went wrong in that concert, to be fair. Not least the fact that if everybody listened to this, I can almost guarantee, we'll be aware of Handel's coronation anthem, Zadok the Priest. It's a very, very famous piece. And there's a long organ introduction to it. It's like quite a few pages, actually, at the score, and before the choir gets to sing. And then you hear the Zadok the Priest and Nathan the Prophet.
If you're a bass.
Yeah, whatever. Of course I'm not going to try and sing the soprano part. I'm a bass.
Shame on you.
Basically, you get this long organ intro, and Ed sort of, you know, straightened up on the organ, started playing, and he didn't have a page turner, which you sometimes do. We have one person who turns the pages of your score over. So he just reaches up, flips over the score, and he realizes that his score of Zadok the Priest is the first page and the back page.
The middle has just fallen. Because it's an old score, it's not stapled together, so it would have just fallen out.
Now, I think a lot of sensible people in the situation would have just owned up and perhaps stopped the concert because it's not going to go well. Not Ed. Ed just improvised the organ part to like a 5 or 6 minute piece.
Yeah, and it's a big part too.
Yeah, we were just like, oh, this sounds a bit funky.
Also, the thing that wouldn't have helped his cause is that it's so well known.
Yeah.
It would be very, very easy to tell. I mean, every now and then Michael would be conducting and he'd just kind of cock his head to one side and slowly look over towards the organ and being like, is that
Holy
Then we all just had the most respect for him because He pulled it off. He absolutely he did nailed pull it.
I mean, it's not like if it was a piece like, for example, For Low I Raise Up that people wouldn't know. If you were to conduct it without any music, it wouldn't be that obvious.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was...
That also happened.
That was something. That was something. That was also the night... Was that the same day of the concert where we then finished, we went for drinks, watched a football game, and then you got felt up by some woman?
Yes, I believe it was. That was... we were at this bar because it was the Euros at the time.
Yes, it was.
And England were playing, and Paula Chappell outside this bar, watching the game happen, and I just felt somebody grab my ass, and a woman was just like, it was like a drive-by hooting, just this woman walked past me, grabbed my ass, and then carried on walking, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that's a sex worker, guys. I was just like tapped to be like, well, hey, do you want some action?
You didn't come out on the first big night out where we went to the Maltese equivalent of the Strip.
it's really selling it.
It was amazing, but for all the wrong reasons. You stayed in and had an early night or something, which is, to be fair, anyway, hang on. Gosh, there's so much happening. I'm just getting this flood of wonderful memories. So there was this massive, massive night out on the Strip, which was just a messy, glorious. It was a fairly sizable group, and we were just basically kind of going, eeny, meeny, miny, that club looks good. And we'd walk up and we'd go to the bouncer, and I think it was myself and Corin at the head of the, trying to kind of bring some order to the proceedings. And we saw the bouncers and we were like, oh, hi, I'm really sorry. We speak English, we're expats. We've got quite a lot of us, can we come in? We've all got ID, so it's going to be totally... And this bouncer just kind of looked at me and put his hand on my shoulder and was just like, don't worry, sunshine, it's full of Brits in here, you'll absolutely love it. And we were like, oh, okay. And we walked in and it was just full of English people. We were like, oh, okay, this is probably where we should be. And then things went dramatically south, so much so that I don't think I can disclose what happened in the club. But
you
anyway...
got back at like 4 or 5, didn't you? It was quite a late finish.
What was even worse is that a handful of us on the final night... made the right decision of, we had a lovely meal, we wandered around the
the quay with all the boats.
Yeah, basically the quay for a while, and we're like, right, let's go home because it's an early plane tomorrow, we need to be on it. We're going to Reading to do a workshop with He Who Must Not Be Named.
Yep, yeah, that conductor.
Yeah, and so we went home. Now, I was the only person in my flat who didn't go out that night because I didn't want to be feeling like crap tomorrow on a plane.
Yeah.
So it was my job to keep an ear out for my flatmates coming home because I had the key. So I think we got home at about 11:45 because it turned out to be a really long walk. We got there and I was like, right, that's fine. I'll do a little bit of my packing now. If anything needs kind of washing up, whatever, I'll do that. And then I'll just sit and wait, I'll have a nap on the sofa or whatever. And then if I can hear the door go, I can let people in. That'll be fine. 2 o'clock hits in the morning. One person's back. I think it's Sam. And I'm like, oh, hey, mate, how was your night out? And he said, yeah, you're really good. He went to bed. I was like, okay, that's great. That's one down. 4 o'clock in the morning, Ed Dunn walks in. Okay, Ed's here. Right, that's good. 4:30, Rob comes in. Now, we're only waiting on one person now, and it's Corin. If anyone was going to come home early,
it was Corin.
It's Corin. So I'm scared. I'm fearful that he may have died. He may have been taken. And we'd have to reina. I need to call someone up. I have a very specific set of skills. So I think it gets to about 6 in the morning, and I'm like, he's not in his bed. So I walk out onto the corridor, and I look down the stairs, and I don't see him. And then just as I turn, I look up the stairs, which leads to the roof. There is no flat higher than us, and I see this huddled dark mass. And I'm like, that wasn't there before. So I slowly kind of creep up the stairs, and it's Corin. Curled up into this little ball, like some woodland, mammal.
Like a fawn.
Yeah. Like a vole. He was just so cozy. And I gently kind of tapped him on the shoulder and I was like, Corin, mate. He was like, oh.
Scratched his ear.
I was like, we've probably got like another an hour and a half until we have to get up. So do you want to, actually come to bed and then you can have a good sleep and you'll be fine. And he's like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. I'm like, all right, well, I'll leave the door on the latch whenever you like. Corin was like, yeah, okay. An hour passes, no Corin. I'm like, okay. And he did the best that he was so drunk, sleepy, just not with it at all. He finally came in. I saw him walk down the hall into his room. He opened the door, turned right, opened the cupboard, walked into the cupboard and closed the door. It's unbelievable. The stories we have. We'll have to do a not safe for work
version of
maybe
this.
Kind of like if we do like a if we do something live.
Oh god,
which I think would be quite fun.
This
then
is
we
the
could...
same boy. I gotta say this one who got locked out of his apartment and was like, you know, these apartments we're staying in have balconies. What if I jump from one balcony to the next one, and then like they could let me in?
Yeah.
And of course he got out. He jumped from one balcony, and they were like on the third or fourth floor.
So not if he'd fallen, he would have died. And the gap between the balconies was well over a meter.
Yeah, it was a pretty bold move from Hugh Grant.
Honestly.
And then he got there and then had this incredibly charming confrontation with this family who were in the apartment where he was just like, oh, hello, gosh, sorry, English, can I get through? I think they were just so shocked they didn't know what to do.
I would have been just terrified for the sheer fact that some person is on my balcony. This Maltese family would have just looked out and seen this tall...
incredibly
Hugh
handsome boy.
Yeah, just
watch
on
out,
the
you might cut yourself on his cheekbones. Just do whatever he says.
It was amazing.
The same tour where somebody fell into a cactus and was finding spines several months later. Mm. Somebody got stung on the arse by a jellyfish. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Not going to name a name, but that was hilarious.
We decided to go skinny dipping after way too much booze in really quite cold water, and it was rough. Like, I'm surprised half of the back row of the choir didn't just die at that point.
Dashed against the rocks like penguins in Planet Earth.
It was really quite funny. The guys who were game for going the whole hog and skinny dipping were kind of like, oh, let's just do it. We won't get this opportunity again. And we all kind of bolted in. And you gradually kind of like, you get used to just seeing your friends as you've never seen them before.
See the fishing tackle.
Yeah. After about 10 minutes, suddenly the bravado goes away and everyone's just quite like... I can't see mine. Where's it? It's so cold. We just all basically, I think they just kind of like, they cocooned back up inside of ourselves.
Like, and as you're like, as you get out, you feel your nipples like screeching against the rocks. It's just like,
yeah. Oh God, it was very, very chilly.
Everybody went in apart from one person who stood there in a manner I can best describe as like Baymax from the film Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
Just awkwardly standing there.
Just looking out onto all his nude friends.
Don't you require assistance?
God. What a tour.
Okay,
a tour.
Again, we're getting into libelous territory here. Oh, good God. So we were talking about a Turkish crazy person in old Hollywood.
Yes, originally. He was of Turkish descent.
Okay.
A professional wrestler, vaudeville actor, and screen actor.
Oh, yeah, that was it. He was like Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
Who, I've got to say, is one of my favourite actors at the moment. I see him in anything, and it's like, ooh, because obviously he's been great in Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. I thought he was pretty good in, he was one of the very few good things about Spectre. He's in the Justice League, I think.
Okay.
There's something else that he's in that's coming up soon. Hang on, let me Google it.
I'm not sure.
Apparently he's a really nice guy as well. I was reading a bunch of anecdotes about him.
I do remember my two younger brothers went through a period of kind of obsession with WWE. When we lived in Australia, and there was one guy, one wrestler, I should say. I think his name was Jeff Hardy,
right?
And he wore these weird kind of elbow length gloves that basically I just remember my brothers they would like backflip off the sofa pretending to be this guy. He had this kind of signature dance that he'd do where he'd kind of raise one hand above his head and then switch it in places with the other hand and periodically kind of like slap his pelvis.
So it was just
with these gloves, it was just bizarre. And so my brothers would just kind of pull socks up to their elbows, and then it was quite funny.
Oh, he's not in Justice League because obviously he's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe already. He's coming to be in the new Blade Runner, which
that looks good.
Because you haven't seen the original, have you? Or have you now? I remember when we talked about it before. I don't think you had.
I think I might have.
It's one of my favorite sci-fi films. I think it's fantastic. And I'm really nervous about the new one. Although apparently it's going to be very long, which implies it's going to be quite slow moving, which maybe they'll capture the spirit of the original. I don't know. But it's got two of my favourite. It's got the director of photography is Roger Deakins, and the director is the guy whose name I can never pronounce. I'm sorry, everybody who comes from the French part of Canada. Denis Villeneuve? Villeneuve? I don't know. I have.
Wait, which film is this?
The new Blade Runner.
2049.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's you try and pronounce the director's name for Blade Runner 2049?
Denis Villeneuve.
Is
he French?
I think he's for the French part of Canada. I think it's Denis Villeneuve or Villeneuve. If you're listening, Denis, please let us know.
Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, hang on. Is there a listen? Oh, no, there isn't. Bollocks. Oh no, Wikipedia. Because he is the same guy who directed Sicario and Arrival.
Ah, both very, very good films.
Yeah, and Sicario.
I watched Arrival again recently. It's glorious.
Sicario, he worked on with Roger Deakins as well. Because if the readers don't know, Roger Deakins is one of the all-time great cinematographers. Even though he's never won an Academy Award. He worked on, for example, Sicario, more famously, Shawshank Redemption. He worked on Skyfall. It's like absolutely he's one of those people that makes films that don't stand out as like slap in the face beautiful. They just kind of look good. Like, just consistently. Because, that was it. I'm looking at his page now. He's basically worked on every Coen Brothers film. So, Fargo, Big Lebowski, Brother, Where Art Thou. A Beautiful Mind. Didn't know he did that one.
I haven't seen A Beautiful Mind. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
But that's Russell Crowe, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, he angers me.
Really?
Yeah.
What about him?
You can always guarantee whenever he's on screen, there's going to be a lot of acting. And I mean
he's
that
an
in...
actor!
Yeah. And yeah,
when you see this musician, guarantee lots of music.
But that's I think it's a thing that I picked this up from Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode in their film podcast, which I don't think we've spoken about before.
No, I don't think we've ever mentioned it.
But they say, oh, there's a lot of acting in it, which is basically when it's being the kind of a role is being hammed up to the nth degree. That's why I'm not a massive fan of his stuff. I just think it reaches a point where it becomes a little grating.
I mean, he's really good in Gladiator.
Brilliant. Yeah, he's brilliant in that.
Actually, hang on, seeing as you're tied to one Wikipedia, let me have a look at this. Russell Crowe. Because he is Kiwi, isn't he? He's not Aussie. Yes. Oh, yeah, he's Kiwi and he's massively into rugby. That's it. He owns a rugby club.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. His filmography has its own Wikipedia article. Do you know what his first film was?
Was it like a first film? I thought one of his first screen things was like an Australian soap.
It's an Australian film, and it's got an incredibly Australian title.
Is it? Oh, I'm not going to say that. That's far too blue. No, okay, what is it?
It's Blood Oath.
Yeah.
May as well just call it Struth, the musical.
Bloody Oath on ice.
Known in some countries as Prisoners of the Sun. It's the main stars were Brian Brown and George Takei. Oh. Of Star Trek fame. So that was his first film in 1990.
Is it Takei or Takei?
I'm not sure, actually. I regretted it as soon as I said it. I'm sure.
I think it's Takei, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
George Takei.
Oh my.
Oh my.
Because there was a story I remember, because Crowe filmed a film in Jersey, as in the island of Jersey in the Channel Islands, where Henry Cavill comes from, who plays Superman. And in Man of Steel, Crowe plays Jor-El, Kal-El's father, and so they had this reunion, and he didn't realise that he'd met Henry Cavill and give him an acting advice when he was filming in Jersey Henry Cavill was like 10 years old,
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. So yeah, he's been in Master and Commander. Oh, he's fantastic in that.
Oh, that is good, actually.
LA Confidential, Beautiful Mind, A Good Year. Yeah, the Robin Hood remake, do you remember that?
No, that was a bit crap.
Les Mis, where he plays Javert. And he does sing, I know, in a rock band, but I know everyone bashed his performance in it. I don't think
it's arguably, because it's arguably one of the worst portrayals of Javert that's been done.
It's not great, but it's not that bad.
It's pretty bad.
Okay, I'm good. I'm trying
it's
to be
pretty
nice.
Fucking wooden, like.
And then we've also got, Noah! Do you remember Noah?
With Emma Watson.
Yeah, and Darren Aronofsky, of all people, directed
that was an odd film.
Yeah, didn't really go anywhere, did it?
No.
And then most recently, War Machine and The Mummy.
Oh, The Mummy. I've heard wonderful things about The Mummy.
Yeah, really top-notch film.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it gets even more Australian. So his first film was Bloody Oath. Blood Oath. His debut was Neighbours.
I thought it was. That's what I said. It was an Australian soap.
Literally.
It would either be...
Is there an actor in Australia whose debut was not in Neighbours?
I don't think so. Really, like they're so far away. It's their big international break, isn't it?
Because like Chris Hemsworth was in it as well. Kylie Minogue was in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's It's pretty amazing.
Jason Donovan?
I feel like this needs its own Wikipedia article that I haven't been able to find. There's a list of celebrity guest appearances, but not a list of actors who became famous off of Neighbours.
I think that was the one
soap that I remember watching as a kid, because it was before The Simpsons. It was on BBC
Two.
I used to
watch it with Mum.
So I was like, but what's Harold going to do? Harold Bishop? Like, oh God, he hasn't come back from that fishing trip for 2 weeks.
Dun, dun, dun.
Also, guess how many episodes Neighbours has made?
Ooh. When was the first episode?
Oh, good question. 18th of March, 1985.
I would say there's 3,000.
7,680 episodes.
That's insane.
Imagine trying to keep track of the continuity on that. It's like Marvel comics.
At least it's kind of, I don't know. There's also an Australian soap called, I think it's Home and Away.
Yeah, Home and Away, I was going to say.
Which I never watched. You're either Neighbours person or a Home and Away person.
Wasn't that more the teenagery, teenage girl specifically? Like, it was more romantic based.
I think so. I mean, to be honest, I just knew that one was targeting a slightly older demographic, which is exactly why I went for Neighbours, because as we've established, I am an old man.
As somebody commented on the YouTube channel, it's like listening to two old men trapped in young bodies.
I really wish you hadn't said channel, because it would have made you sound even, as somebody commented on the YouTube.
That's literally what my dad will say, or when he's not referring to it as the wireless, which he has done unironically, referred to YouTube as the wireless. Or FaceTube, that's another one of his
favorites. FaceTube, my face.
My face tubey.
Yeah.
Trying to work on My Fair Lady and it just didn't work. My face tubey, otherwise known as my noot noot.
Oh no. I've got scarring memories of that.
If you're feeling adventurous, dear readers, especially if you're over the age of 18, do yourself a favor and Google Newt Newt GIF. Put an NSFW maybe in there.
Okay, that's dangerous advice. I thought I was interested and I wanted to know what it was. It was arguably one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life, so please, for the love of God, don't do that.
Avoid me getting into more trouble. We should probably take a detour into an incredibly overstuffed correspondence corner.
Oh, crikey, okay.
My God, have our readers been busy sending us messages.
As always, it is worth saying that we read every single email and we thank you so much for your correspondence. If it's not read out in the podcast itself, it's because we're just too short for time and we have to pick and choose. But we do listen and read to every single one. And yeah, thank you so much for your correspondence.
Thank you, guys.
We've got a regular reader here, JamieJX93. He says, heresy and favourite YouTube videos. Dear Messrs. Clark and Moore. Well, once again,
I was wishful thinking, Jamie, from you there.
Emailing you as I am still listening to last week's podcast with precisely 1 minute, 37 seconds left. Fortunately, the Holy Inquisition have not arrived yet, so for now I'm safe in my role as a great heretic.
The Inquisition always come for you. You're never, ever safe.
I'm glad the term Clark Catholicism has been adopted as a term clashing... What?
Manichaeanly? I imagine that's in reference to Machiavelli.
Yeah.
I think he means Machiavelli. Oh, hang on, what's the
Machiavellian.
Clashing Machiavellian-y against Mormonism.
Against Mormonism. As the two official religions of the podcast. Having said that, this email will be exceptionally short for my standard of emails that I must ask. What are both of your favourite YouTube videos this week?
Ooh.
Mine was The Devil Went Down to Georgia White Trash Washing Machine Cover by Aaron Attaboy McAvoy.
Hang on, I'm going to just Google what this is. So we can't include this in the podcast, but should we both watch this?
Okay. And he says, thank you once again for providing an excellent podcast. Always the highlight of my week. Be safe, eat fruit, and keep listening to the Wikicast. Yours, Jamie.
I'll describe it to you, leaders. So I'm watching this video now. Remember, this is a white trash washing machine cover. So basic, if you imagine the song The Devil Went Down to Georgia, you know that one, like it was originally done on a fiddle. Basically, this guy's got a washing machine that's faulty and you're having like a classic steady boom 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 beat, and he's just jamming with the guitar.
I have seen this.
That's
pretty good.
What's your favorite video this week then, Dan, if that's his favorite?
Oh gosh, I have been listening all the time to the ABC song by Bill Wirtz.
Yeah.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, baby, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, P, Q, R, S, N, T, U, V, B, W, X, Y, Z. Oh, it's so good. I love it.
I've been watching a lot of RIP Vine compilations. I miss Vine.
Mm.
Some of them was a good thing. Are really great. Actually, two other things I watched to give them shout outs. Three. One, I watched the year long vlog from Sammy Paul on his channel, What I'm Doing Now, which is amazing. He did a word a day. And it's like, so it covers from his birthday last year to his birthday this year. And it's incredibly creative. That was very, very cool. Then I watched How to Build a Human by Exurb1A, which is nuts. I don't understand his head. I just really don't, and I don't want to understand, but it's amazing. And then there's a new PhD vlogger I found called RJ Young, who vlogs better than me, and he's only done one vlog. So
I don't know. RJ Young?
has anyone ever gone so far as to do decided want to do look much more like...
We need to talk about this just briefly, just to tell them to tell the readers to go and find this article. I'll provide a link to an article. It was about, was it Bruno Mars?
Oh, does Bruno Mars is gay? Oh, I was referencing the Conduit thing.
Oh, well, it might be this does Bruno Mars is gay might be quite possibly the best article ever written.
It's the Citizen Kane of articles.
It's just glorious. You know, like, it's clearly not been... I was going to say proofread. It's just not been written by someone whose English is first language. In fact, it's probably just a bot.
Oh, right, almost
taking like
a bot,
popular. Yeah. Anyway, I'll provide a link. Do give it a read because it will be guaranteed to make you giggle.
But that's been my like top stuff this week. Check out RJ Young. He's doing an English PhD in America. I can't remember exactly where. And it's just, I found it hilarious. And he's got very, very few subscribers. So I just want to see him grow because he deserves it. Oh my God.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Okay, this next one Dan has gifted to me. Caitlin Cox has emailed in. She's from Wales. I'm going to preface that with this first sentence already. I don't know how to pronounce Welsh other than a few basic rules, so I think this might go, Bo Prynhawn Nos Dralads, from that apparently desolate place called Wales. I know Arad Heglu, which is slow police, and that's about it. I live very close to Wales, and I think Pixelgum might actually be able to do it better than me. But basically, yeah, Welsh, in case you don't realise, readers, is a language that is 99% consonant. That vowels are a myth in Valley.
It's pretty crazy.
She writes, though, in English, mercifully, love your podcast, long-time reader, first-time writer. Thanks for writing in. It's become a bit of an event for me, and my parents think I'm insane laughing to myself with wireless headphones on. Spreading mental instability. Great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anywho, we do.
I'd like to go on record for saying, all caps, I freaking love dogs and plan on getting a Newfoundland and an Alaskan Malamute in the not so near future.
Oh, they're huge dogs. They're amazing.
You really like small dogs, don't you? However, all caps, having had cats all my life, I just want to say the argument that cats aren't nurturing is bullshit. Her swearing, not mine. Honestly, the cats I have right now provide constant cuddles and are pretty much therapy cats. Please enjoy this picture of an article I saw. Oh, I thought that was her cat. Oh, cats are nice and enjoy spending time with humans, study finds, with a very nice looking cat. I thought that was your cat, Caitlin. Sorry.
It's lies. Filthy, filthy lies.
Deception. I don't know why all dog lovers are so animal racist. Cats and dogs are both lovely. Thank you. Inclusive. Stop being racist, dog lovers. And also, stop being racist towards animals. Although she has capped it off with, I have a preference of sweet popcorn, although my parents have a tendency to buy sweet and salted popcorn, which I suppose is either an abomination or the best of both worlds. Absolutely an abomination.
Oh, I think that's the best of both worlds.
No, you don't know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates, not in a good way. Like, it's a box of chocolates, but some of them are filled with cyanide. And you're just like, whoa, I'm just going to stuff all these in my mouth.
I mean, I like sweet things and I also like salty things, so I'm happy either way.
Make of this what you will. Caitlin Cox, 17 and 7/12 years old.
Nice.
Thank you very much, Caitlin.
So we've got one here from B.
Capital B.
Capital B. Book recommendation in regards to nerd and geek culture. Dear Messrs. Clark and Moore, I was listening to your discussion about geekery in the last excellent episode of the podcast, and I was wondering if either of you have ever read Microsurfs by Douglas Copeland. If not, I would highly recommend it. It's one of my favourite fiction books and has a lot to add to the discussion. All the nerd characters in it are very sympathetic, but it also makes some interesting points about how nerd culture can encourage overlooking simple sensory pleasures. Aside from that, it's also just a great story. Thanks for the great podcasting, Rebecca. P.S. Simon, I'm going into Upper Sixth in September and I'm thinking of applying for Oxford for Maths. Any advice? P.P.S. Sorry, Dan, but cats are better. Dogs are great, but just not quite as great as cats. It should be just quickly... I will say that the readers, the team dog we won the poll. I saw someone tweeted me with a picture saying that the dogs prevailed.
To those of you that aren't aware, there's a Facebook group, which we're not in. We can't see what happens in this group, which we will include a link in the description in this podcast. But there is a discussion group for the Wikicast, which is f***ing mental that we have discussion group. So to go back to the earlier point, I haven't read Microsofts. Does sound interesting.
No, nor have I.
To be honest, I haven't read a lot of geek culture stuff. I mean, I've read so many books from the Black Library, 40K stuff, and I know you've read a lot of Warcraft stuff. But in terms of general, like, for example, I haven't read very much Asimov, and I haven't read very much Philip K. Dick and stuff like that. I really need to do better. As for advice to do Oxford Maths, it's a great course. It's difficult, but very, very rigorous, and, you know, great prospects afterwards. If you're thinking of doing it, this might sound stupid, only focus on being good at maths, because that's honestly all they care about. Take your understanding of maths beyond what is required of the A-level syllabus for maths and further maths. If you like, maybe look through the syllabus of what you'd be doing in first year and start reading up on what those fields of maths are like. Maybe a read through some textbooks if you can get your hands on them. Basically, it's all about competence. That's all they care about. And absolutely best of luck for it.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay, next email from Peter Walker. Hi there, just writing in to say that Simon is 100% correct that cats are in pretty much every way better than dogs. I like how Team Cat has heard the rallying cry and they've...
Also, you've breezed over Peter's amazing tactic of making sure the email goes somewhere.
One, cats are independent, so that you can go on holiday without needing them to put in kennels, which is a huge plus. You don't need to climb up their shite, and they do more dumb stuff than dogs and generally funnier viral videos.
Look, read up that email to where his name is and the subject is, and see look at the two receipts. He sent it to three Spongy and Electric just variants on each
Spongy
one to make sure he gets it right.
Ampersand Electric and Spongy and Electric. Well,
that's amazing.
This is going
Peter,
in the
well
podcast.
Done.
That is absolutely going in, because that is dedication. If, just for reference, everyone, it is Spongy Electric. There's no and, and there's no come in.
SpongyElectric@gmail.com.
Hopefully this list aids Simon in his battle to show which species is the better. Have a lovely time. XOXOX, Peter aged 18 and one quarter.
Oh, I'm liking the fractions this week.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I want everyone to sign their three emails with that. And I love the fact that Team Cat is winning this week.
We've got another email from Liam Edwards entitled Lies Deception.
Deception!
He is going into his third year at university studying astrophysics. He's a big fan of the podcast. And he thought the last one was very inspiring, in particular the discussion regarding geeky, nerdy activities, as he's been discouraged and also discouraged others from exploring and participating in certain geeky activities to fit in better with cooler kids. However, since coming to university, I found that doing what you're passionate about is underrated, yet fundamental step to happiness.
I'm really,
totally
really glad.
With you.
Really, really glad that you said that, actually. I'm really. Yeah. It was uncharacteristic for us to be serious and delve into a subject in any measure of depth.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad we did last time. So to make up for that, this week was completely different.
I had a lovely email from another regular reader, Amy. She messaged me on Twitter talking about how much she enjoyed that conversation, so I think it's clearly made kind of an impact in quite a lot of people. It was really fun. I mean, I'll listen back to the podcasts for like continuity's sake, just make sure we haven't missed anything, but I genuinely really loved listening back and talking and hearing our conversation. I thought it actually had some substance to it, whereas usually we just waffle about nonsense.
Yeah, we clearly took lessons from last week. We're like, that was great. We should do this every week this week. Yeah, let's talk about Malta, shall we? Let's just talk about how our mates got bevved and fell in a cactus.
He'd also like to add my piece to the cats and dogs debate, saying I don't have a favourite as they're both wonderful and loving animals. Fair play. I'm not sure I agree, but all right, you're entitled to your opinion. I also hope the subject line caught your attention, and by now I've probably realised there's nothing to do with the contents of this email. Is there purely in the hope that Simon reads it out in Sorguera's voice?
Well,
Simon?
I was read like a book there. My God.
Keep up the fantastic work on both the podcast and Simon's YouTube channel. Good luck, Simon, for your PhD, and also good luck in your degree as well, Dan. Thank you very much. Kindest regards and apologies for the long email, Liam.
He will learn your secrets. Lies. Deception.
Can I... I just want to... What other quotes are there? I should probably learn more than just one.
Save
quote.
The rebellion. Save the dream.
There's the thing. Do you remember there's that random hentai monster that's in his cave and it reads people's minds?
I beg your pardon?
No, never mind. It's not worth reading.
Save the rebellion, save the dream. Also, what would they do when they catch you? What will you do if they break you? What if you continue to fight? What will you become?
Just, you've got to sound like you're taking a really girthy at the end of every line.
Method acting at its finest.
What
there.
Will you do if they break you?
This is when I'm glad that we're now recording in different rooms.
Next, completely unrelated, and nothing to do with us. If you'd like to look at the Crauschwitz Wikipedia page, we've had an anonymous tip off that something has changed there.
We've checked it out ourselves, and it's worth just giving it a quick look. We'll say that's all we're going to say about it.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Sorry, noot, noot.
Sorry. No,
it's in my head. Next, we have an email from how did you say I should pronounce this?
I think it's Maria.
Maria van Maren. Yeah. She's Dutch. Dear, I hope this is intentional. Dear Messrs. Moore and Clark, not Messrs. Just Messrs. to the respective Messrs. Moore and Clark.
Also in the right order. Thank you very much.
Well, it's debatable. After enjoying several of your podcast episodes, I felt compelled to weigh in on the dogs versus cats debate. My entire life, I've been firmly a team cat person. Having been bitten in the face as a child by a dog only helped solidify this stance. Even being attacked in my sleep by my cat did not change this. I still have the scars. I mean, this is understandable. Like, I feel like a much more childhood trauma is associated with dogs than with cats.
Yes, that's true.
Because they're bigger.
My first encounter was a dog, I was like, well, we've spoken about this. I was like,
oh yeah,
I had a phobia about them for ages. I still stand by the fact that dogs are better though. But do continue.
Now, this email is different from several others we've received this week because she follows up. This summer, we saved 2 5-day-old kittens from my mum's compost heap. Ah, cute, one might think. Since then, I have come to the realization that even though most adult cats are very complex, loving, intelligent, and self-sufficient creatures, kittens are not. While they don't have a mother cat to teach them, the task falls to you. And after an entire summer of bottle feeding them, burping them...
My God.
I don't even know if that's completely necessary, but good on you. Wiping their asses, being bitten and scratched, and having to deal with more feces than I had ever anticipated having to deal with in my entire life, I come to the conclusions that cats still rule, but boy, is it a lot of work to raise them. And that she's included a bunch of pictures. And oh, you've got to admit, Dan, these cats are absolutely adorable.
They are quite cute looking cats, I must admit. In fact, I was at another party a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, get you.
Are you sensing a theme? And they had, I think it's a Russian blue.
Oh,
it's a type of cat, and that was a kitten, and he was just adorable.
Oh wow, these are, oh my God, they're so small. The SMOL, they are so small. I had to put this one out. Also, keep up the great work, guys. The kids and me love listening to the kids listen to this.
Oh gosh.
Oh God.
I'm so sorry.
So as I was saying about the stocks, responsible financial planning is absolutely essential, Daniel.
Exactly.
You're taking notes. Write that down. Maybe she means the kittens.
Or
possibly baby goats. Who knows? I was wondering if Dan ever or still speaks any Dutch. When we went to Holland, Dan, what was the Dutch that you spoke?
What was the Dutch that I spoke?
Because we got into the Airbnb and the guy, you were like, oh, I used to live in Den Haag. And the guy said something, and he said something back, and then immediately switched back to English.
Oh, I think he was asking me like, oh, how long, and where were you? And I was like, oh yeah, this is for how long, and this is where. And then I immediately followed up with a question, but in English, being like, yes, but I really love your wallpaper. I tried to just suddenly kind of sway it. Kind of, I think my understanding isn't too bad, and I can recite kind of phrases that I memorize that are handy when you're getting about.
Yeah,
but. As you know, I was never anywhere near fluent. My two younger brothers actually lived in the Netherlands for considerably longer than I did. Their Dutch is quite good.
Oh, really?
It's an interesting language.
Says here, as a Dutchie in a very international master's program, one of my favorite things is listening to my international friends try to attempt Dutch pronunciation. It's like Welsh earlier. It's one of those languages where it's you either get it or you don't. It sounds like.
See, I think I've got the sounds down pretty well. So like, okay, so good morning. In Dutch. Here we go. Any Dutch people, you can judge my pronunciation. So I think I wouldn't be wrong in saying goeiemorgen.
I mean, pretty. I have no idea, mate. But that sounds great. Great to me.
It was something we taught at school. So it was like goeiemorgen is good morning. Goeiemiddag was good, like afternoon, and goeienavond I think was. Good evening or good night.
And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I then also learned, what was it? Hoi schatje, das is mooie tepels, I think, which is basically something like...
You take PayPal?
I think it's like, those are nice nipples or something. I can't remember.
I'm really looking forward to Dutch people, because we have a few readers. I'm really looking forward to their take on this. Also, if you are Welsh, and could you send us some stuff with some pronunciation guides in Welsh, just so we can illustrate how nuts that language is? Because
no, for sure,
I would love. I'm sure that Pixel Girl would enjoy that one. Listening to us fail at languages.
But thank you very much for the cute pictures. Those are very, very cute kittens.
Yeah, thank you, Marie. And she just says, best wishes for the future. I'll go pull a kitten from the blinds now, if you excuse me. Excuse me. Well, you're a great mum. You're like the mother of dragons, but mother of kittens. Oh, God. Ryan Eugenio, what the fuck do you
Comic
think you're
Sans,
doing?
What the fuck are you
Get
doing?
Get out. Take your headphones off.
It's all right. I've deleted the email. We're fine. It's all right.
Okay. God, it nearly touched me. Oh, God. You know, I was at a conference once, and I saw a poster, a full academic poster in Comic Sans, and I was just like, what are you doing? I nearly wanted to go up to I should have just gone up to him and punched him in the face. I really should have.
So I've just reached into the bin and withdrawn this email from Ryan.
With protective
clothing.
Never use
that font again, otherwise with many, many gloves on. Dear Diamond and San,
nailed it.
I'm a physics student from the Philippines, and I'm a long-time reader of the podcast and Simon's channel. I really enjoy listening to your podcast, and it's made boring walks and commutes much more enjoyable. I also listened to the Hello Internet podcast, which is very, very good, and was wondering if you can recommend any more two dudes talking types of podcast.
Well, not to brag or anything, but we did meet both Brady and Gray at VidCon. We had a beer.
We did.
We had a beer with them.
And John and Hank Green.
Yeah, not that we're gloating or anything.
We gave. I specifically remember proffering my drinks tokens to Hank. He was like, "Oh my god, you've got." I'm trying to do an American accent. I can't really do it.
Like, oh my god, Stacey,
he totally has drinks tokens. Like, oh my god, yeah, and that was kind of cool. He says, "Oh right, so let's touch on the podcast first. Two dudes talking."
I mean, Triforce is my favorite one of those, which admittedly is three dudes talking.
Triforce is amazing. We've spoken about Kermode and Mayo, their podcast. It's really, really good. Story Not Story with Wheezy Waiter and his wife China. Great. I properly love that. Basically, the premise is that they're in bed on an evening and they have to make up a bedtime story for each other. And it's just so cathartic and wonderful to listen to. If it's just general chit-chat, not necessarily the whole two dudes talking, but my favourite podcast is Frank Skinner on the Radio, which is it's a recording from the live show that they do on Absolute Radio on a Saturday morning. Just search Frank Skinner, and it's usually himself and two other guests, Emily Dean and Alan Cochran, two very, very good comedians. And it's just nice to listen to. And again, it's very much just loose, off-the-cuff stuff like this is.
I miss Hat Chat. I miss Hat Films' podcast. They haven't done it for ages. And they have the
set
now.
Yeah, that was really good.
If you are listening to this and you're a Hatter, tweet at them. Say that the Wikicast says, you know, get your ass in gear. We want more Hat Chats.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not a huge podcast listener, to be honest. I mean, the only one which we haven't mentioned in this bit is My Dad Wrote a wrote a Porno.
My Dad Wrote a Podcast.
Yeah. Can you imagine if My Dad Wrote a Podcast?
That'd be amazing.
It would be top of the charts immediately. But in case people aren't aware, my parents are like superhumans, and every time I get them to meet friends from uni, they completely supplant me in my friends' affections. Like, Liv's just like, when can I see your dad again? Like, it's all nice, you know, I haven't seen you for a few weeks, but when can I see dad lad? it's actually remarkable. He's way cooler than I'll ever be, and it's so depressing.
He's wonderful.
Don't you start.
Also, I mean, but both of them are lovely. Your mum picked me up from the station and took me to a party, so that
and
was great.
And cake. She also
and gave me cake. Thank you, Jill. It was amazing.
And now, dear readers, we come to what may be your favourite section of the podcast. For us, it's the most stressful section of the podcast, because we're going to read out a bizarre fan fiction that somebody has written about us. Dan, what is the story we're hearing about this week?
Right, so this week it's another instalment of the... The Time Traveller with the enormously large forehead?
I think it's extraordinarily large, but proceed.
That's right. From our regular reader, Hannah. It's the fourth instalment in the franchise. I'm quite excited to see where this goes. So
yeah, I'm really excited to see the inevitable film adaptation.
She also wants to say best wishes to last week's fanfiction writer, I think it was Joshua. He's amazing. So
yeah, I've got to say, both well you done. And Josh, you're like vying for airtime, but you're both doing amazingly well. I love it.
Oh my god, I also just read, in case Dan's parents are listening, I'm really sorry, but they asked for this. It's not my fault, don't blame me.
God.
To the rest of you, enjoy.
Right, okay, I'm not looking at this one. And good grief. Good luck, everyone.
Chapter 4. When he woke up the next morning, Daniel was very confused about where he was, but the second he opened his eyes, turned around and took a look at the room he'd been sleeping in, he remembered the accident, if that's what you may call it. The friendly and handsome yet weird stranger. Sorry, mate.
Also,
and the fact he still hadn't found out anything about the strange circumstance he'd somehow gotten himself into. When he saw a clock on the wall, he realised that it was almost lunchtime, so he figured he should go get up and go downstairs to thank the stranger for letting him stay the night, and then... Well, actually, Daniel had no idea what he should do next, but staying in the bedroom wouldn't bring him closer to finding answers for sure. Simon was standing in the kitchen, preparing a nice brunch for him and Daniel when he heard the young man coming down the stairs. Usually he didn't have any time for things like this, but he would still be able to work on his thesis when there wasn't a confused stranger in his flat, Simon thought. Good morning, he said when Daniel entered the kitchen. Good morning, thank you for letting me stay here overnight, he mumbled in response, still a little sleepy, but mainly trying to fight the thoughts about how handsome this man was. Oh god, here we go. He'd shaved, so he looked a little younger, giving him a nice, soft look.
I wish.
Oh, what he would be able to do to touch those cheeks. Oh,
crikey. Oh god.
Oh, great. Okay. I'm trying to read this through tears in my eyes. Do you want eggs or pancakes? Simon asked while placing a pan on the black surface and turning a switch on.
How do you like your eggs? Fertilised.
Oh, God. I think I'd prefer eggs, Daniel stuttered. I think I prefer eggs, Daniel stuttered nervously, feeling embarrassed even though he knew that no one could read his mind, hopefully. When they sat down to eat, Simon noticed he still barely knew anything about the stranger, including why he thought it would be a good idea to let him in and stay at the house. He watched the boy while eating and wondered what would be the right thing to do next. Kick him out? Oh, great.
Yeah.
But he couldn't just let someone in these conditions sleep on the street, especially not in October. Also, he'd become weirdly attached to Daniel. Maybe he just missed having a flatmate, or maybe it was Daniel's mysterious aura. It's definitely my mysterious aura.
That's one way to
Whatever the reason was, he knew he couldn't just kick him out. Some time later, after they'd finished their meals, they were cleaning the dishes, Simon had found out that Daniel had spent some years of his life in Australia and graduated last summer. His plans were to go to university and study English. So, how did you end up in the forest? Simon asked, looking curiously at him. I stuttered Dan, uncertain as to what he should say. I honestly don't know.
Oh.
Telling the truth would probably be the best opinion, he figured, because even if he didn't know where, or rather when, he was, there was one thing he was sure about. He had to find a way to get back there. So he breathed in and out calmly, trying to bring up the courage to tell the story, or at least the parts he could remember.
I was going at 88 miles an hour, Marty. We gotta go back!
He started to feel his throat becoming dry, while small drops of sweat formed on his forehead. He wished he'd just made up something and tried to escape as quickly as possible, but now he had brought himself into this situation and there was no going back. He breathed in once more, closed his eyes, focused on that one sentence he had to say while Simon looked at him curiously. One sentence. That was all it would take. So he tried not to think about the consequences his actions might have. And finally, after a few seconds, which seemed like hours, he opened his mouth and whispered, I'm a time traveler.
Is that
That's
it?
The end. That's the end.
I'm getting like storytelling blue balls about this. It's just like, I want to know more.
It's so, this is really good.
I was, every time when even vaguely erogenous zone is mentioned, it's like his throat started to tighten and I'm just like, is this?
Yeah, why is it tightening? What's in his throat? Oh, he's just stressed.
It tightened and sweat formed on his forehead as Simon's tongue made its way down his throat.
As Simon's tongue tickled Dan's uvula. You're like, no, stop. Right.
His knowledge of human anatomy was questionable at best, as he tickled his uvula with his tongue and went, come!
Do it. Do it
come
now.
Come on, what are you waiting for? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, God. So, Daniel, what have we learned today?
We've learned about Kala Pasha, or Joseph T. Ricard, the American professional wrestler, vaudeville comedian, and film actor during the silent era, who... amazingly would go into town with $150,000 strapped around his waist, which I think is just as belts
like a monetary
go, that's
suicide
bold.
Vest.
We had a chat about our kind of like films that we enjoyed. I think there was some mention of Buster Keaton as well.
Yeah. And then we mostly talked about Malta and our various escapades.
Yeah, obviously the logical link between those two things. Yeah. Silent era film, a chapel choir tour to Malta.
And then we went to talk about upcoming films. Russell Crowe, Dave Bautista, new Blade Runner. And a bunch of other stuff before we had... honestly, I think my favourite part of the podcast now is the Correspondence Corner. We love hearing from you guys.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's always a balancing act trying to work out how long we should have it in the podcast. I think if we had it our way, we'd just be like, this is the Wikipedia article, done in 5 minutes. Right, emails. And then just like answer your questions. Maybe we'll do a special or something about that. But yeah, so we had that. And then we had, I think, possibly the least sexually explicit fan fiction.
Yeah, it was pretty tame. So, which I like.
Your mum is okay to listen to this one.
I hope so.
That is all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook, and if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel, Spongy and Electric.
Upcoming film opinions, Welsh pronunciation guides, and other thoughts on the show can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole,
and we'll see you next time.
Da 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 da. Boof. Yeah. Yeah. End of podcast now.